For iPhone 5s, the day arrives. From APM, I'm Jeff Horwich. This is the Marketplace Midday Update. It is Friday, the 21st of September. Happy Friday, everybody. Coming up, we'll take a look at an interesting new report that looks at a group of families in poverty that were given housing vouchers. What was the effect on their state of mind? But first, the iPhone 5 is on sale today. It's on track to becoming Apple's biggest iPhone hit ever. People are lining up around the world. There are 2 million plus pre-orders. So if you want one, use your current smartphone to find your way to the nearest Apple store. Just don't count on using your new iPhone to find your way home. Here's Marketplace's Queen Akim.
The iPhone 5 offers a bigger screen, it's faster, and it's the lightest smartphone ever. What the iPhone no longer offers, Google Maps, which used to come pre-installed. Christina Bonington is a reporter at Wired. She says that ever since Google entered the smartphone market with its Android operating system, Apple and Google have been at war.
It really seems like Apple has just completely removed Google from its operating system.
Apple replaced Google Maps with its own mapping app, and the early verdict is it's an inferior product. Bonington says destinations are showing up in the middle of the ocean along with other snafus. But judging from the lines forming in front of the Apple stores around the world, Bonington says the switch doesn't appear to be hurting sales. Here in Los Angeles, Eugene Watson stood in line in front of the Apple store.
Everything seems exciting, from the new headphones to the three microphones to the slimmer version of it.
Watson says he'll be disappointed if Apple Maps isn't useful, but he's staying in line to buy the new iPhone anyways. I'm Queen Akim for Marketplace.
You might also have heard that this is the first iPhone to support something called 4G LTE. Now, LTE is supposedly the gateway to faster online data, and it's being trumpeted as one of the phone's main selling points. For more on the promise of LTE, I've got Jeff Kagan. He's a tech analyst and a columnist with E-Commerce Times. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Jeff.
So what is LTE? The vast majority of Americans would have no idea what this acronym means, but we're told it will be oh so important to our lives. Break it down for us.
LTE stands for Long-Term Evolution. And what it means is one way of delivering a fast 4G signal. That's all it is. There are other ways as well, like HSPA+. Bottom line, just think of 4G like buying gas for your car. You can buy gas from a variety of different stations. You can go to BP, or you can go to Chevron, or you can go to Shell. But it's all just gas.
But so much of this, Jeff, depends on the networks where you live and the towers where you live. If I can look and see, okay, I live somewhere with a strong LTE network and I want a fast connection, an LTE phone is good for me, right?
That's true. But one thing that customers don't understand is they hear the words 4G and they think 4G is available everywhere, and it's not. Today in the marketplace, there are three different generations. We've got 4G, 3G mostly, and still have 2G. They roll it out to the bigger markets, the markets where they have more risk and more opportunity, then they work their way down the chain.
And you make a very important point there. We have listeners in urban areas. We have listeners in rural areas. This whole conversation really only matters for people who live in cities.
That's right? True. And in fact, if you work in a city and you live in a rural area, you may be using both. When you're in the city, you may be 4G. When you drive home, you may be 3G. That's the way it is in area after area around the country. So just because the carriers say that they're 4G does not mean they're 4G everywhere. But that's just part of the process.
For people getting their new iPhones today and in the coming days, is this going to make a big difference? Are they going to be zipping along through their surfing like never before?
Is it going to make a big difference? I think it's going to make a big difference in the marketing. All you have to do is choose the best network for you, because the best one for you won't be the same as the best one for your brother or your mother. It depends on the spot and the places where you spend time. Don't pay any attention to the commercials and the advertising, the marketing.
Jeff Kagan is a tech analyst at E-Commerce Times. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Elijah.
And let's do the numbers. Well, so far this morning, U.S. stock markets are up as they were in Asia and in Europe. Is it the iPhone? Who's to say? But at the moment, the Dow Industrials are up about 0.3%, as is the S&P 500 index. The NASDAQ index is up about 0.5%. Apple shares, for what it's worth, are up almost 1% in the first hours of trading. European leaders converged on Rome today for a series of meetings. Things have been relatively calm there since the European Central Bank announced a rescue plan, but chaos often seems just below the surface. Italy and Greece, therefore, today put out a statement together meant to reassure you, me, and everybody that they do not ever, 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 ever plan to leave the euro. EU regulators have cleared the way for one giant music company to buy another. Universal wants to purchase EMI, but the Europeans, as is often the case with these things, have a few conditions. So as to assure the new entity doesn't have too much market power, the merged company would have to sell the labels of some of its biggest artists, including Coldplay, Pink Floyd, and David Bowie. The Beatles, however, get to stay. And now to a new report that has a lot of people talking and blogging this morning. In the 90s, a federal program called Moving to Opportunity gave housing vouchers to very poor families in five of America's biggest cities. The idea was to move people out of their present neighborhood and presumably to somewhere better. A new report in the journal Science tells us a few important things about how those families fared. Some of it's encouraging, some of it not so much. Robert Sampson is a sociologist at Harvard. He has studied the Moving to Opportunity program himself, and he wrote an accompanying article evaluating the report. Good to talk with you.
Good to be here.
So we've got 4,500 families here. That's a pretty good sized sample. What happened when they were able to move to better neighborhoods?
Yes, this is a study of families that were living in really distressed environments. And what happened was the government assigned housing vouchers to residents. The families that got vouchers initially moved to neighborhoods that were lower in poverty. Then over time, there was somewhat of a shift back to neighborhoods that were getting poor or actually moving back to their original neighborhoods.
We did have a small number of families, though, as I understand it, who spent some time in better neighborhoods, and we could look at their quality of life, their mental state. What can we say about that?
The results, I sort of view it as sort of good news and bad news. So the good news is that when we shift people out of extreme poverty and we follow them over a long period of time, and families, in particular women, did much better on mental health. In particular, they were happier. The bad news, if you want to view it that way, is that in terms of economic outcomes, whether it might be income, employment, and so forth, that didn't change. So in other words, the long-term result is not that the economics of the situation or the family was improved, but rather the mental health was improved.
So putting aside the mental health benefits, which are tending to lead the headlines on this morning, the other big takeaway is that it is very difficult to create permanent shifts for people socioeconomically. Has there been anything learned since this program was in effect in the 90s that might give us some hope on that front?
Well, it is very hard, and I think that's one of the key findings. But it does suggest that it's hard to change poverty and that we need to think about interventions that take into account both the individual situation, but we can also think about more place-based interventions or interventions in the neighborhoods themselves.
Sociologist Robert Sampson at Harvard, thank you.
Thank you.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
If you're looking for bright spots in this economy, you can get a bit of a buzz from the craft brewing industry. Sales are up, local beers are springing up all over. Now, many of those brewers want to make it easier for customers to bring home their beer, and the key is a refillable container called a growler. Here's David Nogueras.
If you're a fan of craft beers in Oregon, there's a good chance you already own a growler. If you have no idea what one is, I've actually got my hands on one right now. It's made of brown glass, and it's about the size of a 2-liter soda bottle. The mouth is wide, and about the size of a silver dollar. And it's closed off with a nifty ceramic seal. Most importantly, it's got a built-in handle for easy transport. Here in Oregon, the growler's convenience and popularity has spread beyond just breweries.
Come on in, I'm going to take care of you.
In the central Oregon city of Bend, at least one gas station has gotten into the mix. This summer, this stop-and-go mini-mart and Shell station opened a growler filling station in the store. Behind the counter, one of the station's licensed bartenders, Dolly Haney, has a selection of 30 different craft beers.
Most of these beers that we have on tap, you can't get in bottles and cans. You can only get them on tap.
And from a brewer's perspective, there's a simple reason for that.
A growler is, in a lot of respects, the only way they can cost-effectively package their product.
Scott Metzger is the founder of the Freetail Brewing Company in San Antonio. He says bottling and canning lines represent huge capital investments for small breweries that are still building their brands. He says while the craft beer movement has been a sea change for the industry, Texas liquor laws have failed to keep up, changing little since the days after Prohibition.
So we've really fallen behind the rest of the country in terms of having an environment that fosters the growth of the craft beer industry like we've seen everywhere else.
Metzger wants to see Texas join other states that have already changed their laws. Washington State put a law in place this year allowing for growler fills, as did Arizona, where growler language was included in a broader liquor bill at the request of the drugstore chain Walgreens. But no word yet on whether you'll be able to fill up your growler when you get your prescriptions. In Bend, Oregon, I'm David Nogueras for Marketplace.
Benetton is an Italian clothing company that's been known to court controversy with its ads over the years. And a new campaign is also making waves, but this time it's for kind of a different reason. Critics say it's kind of boring. From Marketplace's European desk, here's Stephen Beard.
Once Benetton ads really were shocking. They featured such images as an AIDS patient on his deathbed, but the latest campaign's rather different. It focuses uncontroversially on the plight of the young unemployed.
For the commitment you demonstrated, day in, day out.
The campaign is called Unemployee of the Year. It aims to celebrate the millions of young people struggling to find work. 100 jobless youngsters can win around $6,000 each for a local employment project. All very worthy, say the critics, but hardly shocking. And, says marketing analyst Richard Perks, not very commercial either.
Here's an advertising campaign which doesn't do anything to actually get you into the shops to look at the merchandise. It seems to me to be fundamentally misguided.
But Benetton supporters claim this will win the brand loyalty of the young, and they claim it's not so different from previous Benetton campaigns. After all, youth unemployment is one of the most shocking features of modern life. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And finally, as we wrap up here, every year a group called the Annals of Improbable Research hands out the Ig Nobel Prizes. They do this at a ceremony at Harvard. And let's have a look at some of this year's winners, shall we? A physicist at Stanford used mathematics to explain the shape of the human ponytail. Very important. Researchers at the University of California looked at why people spill their coffee. Three Dutch psychologists discovered that people estimating the height of the Eiffel Tower will give lower estimates when they're leaning to the left. And finally, one more example. A neuroscientist at UC Santa Barbara showed various pictures to a dead salmon and then measured the emotional reactions in the dead salmon's brain. And there were some to measure, apparently, flickers, which illustrates the irony in this particular winner. These researchers specifically set out to show you can sometimes demonstrate even the most preposterous premise. That's all for the Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Jeff Horwich, and we're coming to you from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.